Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we have reviews of Hitman, Bad Boys, Ride or Die, and Bad Behavior with Jennifer Connelly. Some entertainment news and our topic this week, film or TV nitpicks or cliches or whatever the hell we decide to define it as, because it's already been quite the debate. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
What's happening?
And Amanda Sink.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
You came back. Do you know Spanish now, all of a sudden?
I was going to say, new podcaster, who dis?
¿Tú?
Oh, well, she's going.
She's just putting together phrases that don't make sense anymore.
Yeah. I am. But I have learned small phrases, just picking it up through conversations. And also I was doing Duolingo for a little while, but then I stopped.
Oh, I was doing Dua Lipa music for a while, but then I stopped.
You wish you were doing Dua Lipa.
I said music. I was very clear on that statement. I'll tell you that.
We know what the truth was though.
Welcome back, Amanda. I know you don't have your normal audio. You're kind of going old school on the podcast audio this week because you don't have a complete setup. You moved recently. Is that what happened? That's where you've been for the last 6 years?
Yeah, and I feel like people are probably like, at what point does this stop becoming the thing? Because I've talked about moving like 4 times over the past couple of years. So for dedicated hoes, this is all true. I have really moved this many times, but now I'm just a little bit further north in Denver, so I don't have as much of a commute. So here's to me being on time in the future.
Well, we'll be sure to place money on that.
Hold your breath.
Can you define what a dedicated hoe is? Because I would love to know exactly what that means.
They're Patreons who you can find at patreon.com / The Hollywood Outsider.
Thought it was slang for something else. That's good to know.
No, our Hollywood Outsiders.
Oh, got it.
Hoes. Our hoes are dedicated hoes.
Duly noted. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider's private group. We're on X at Buy Popcorn, and we're also on Discord if you want to join Discord, where we also put the topics in the group and Discord. So you can chime in if you would like. What's new with everybody else? Did you guys listen to John and I pontificate on positivity last week? Because we're going to destroy that this week.
I thought that was pretty funny how it was like, we're going to talk about positivity. And then there was like absolutely no positivity for the first like 15 minutes.
We had to get it out of our system first.
Yeah, you gotta cleanse the palate before you hit it hardcore, you know?
Do you though?
Look,
nope, you do.
You can talk about negativity in a positive way. And I think that's what we did. I think that's what we did. We were trying to accomplish that.
Okay. All right.
It was good.
Well, good. See, we got a lot of nice comments about that episode because of the positivity. So I guess we'll...
Because Troy and I weren't on it?
No. Actually, I don't think that's true at all. I think they missed Troy and you.
Yeah, I think we got more comments about when are Troy and Amanda, or what's-her-face, coming back.
He had to remember what your name was. Did you hear that?
He did. Like, he forgot it.
Take pause. Where he's like, what is her name?
Took me a second. I was like, oh, good.
He's like, it's not on the screen. It just says Squadcast JBRVN. What?
Yeah, she couldn't even bother typing her own name in it on screen. Come on.
Hey, can you talk real quick, since you haven't been here forever, about your ice storm? You were in one of Colorado's biggest ice storms, yeah, recently?
Was it one of the biggest ice storms? I don't know.
I saw your car look pretty massive to me. I mean, it looked like you'd been pelted, like you were... basically in a war-torn country. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, it was either an ice storm or it was like the Pacific Northwest during, you know, some sort of...
Where are we going, John?
Glacial period.
He's thinking about some like end of world apocalyptic type of thing, I feel like.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Meteor shower? Maybe.
Meteor shower?
I'm trying to figure out like where was it going? Because sometimes you just start going and then the trail ends at the ocean. It just doesn't go back to a path.
That's like my new thing lately is I'll keep going and then I'll be like, oh shit, what was I going to say? And then I'll forget and just give it up.
Thing. I promise
she was trying to turn it into an ad read to let people know that Civil War can be purchased on video on demand now.
Hey, there you go. Tie it all together. No, you were in a massive ice storm and your car got pelted. Didn't you have like 100 dents in your car or something?
There's something wild. Basically, it was definitely larger than baseball size hail. I did not have a good time that night because I was also working and I'm trying to keep people safe who don't care about that stuff in the moment. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, crap, am I going to be able to drive home tonight? And the worst part of it is 2 seconds before I was about to leave, I was like, hey, maybe I should go to the bathroom before I leave, even though it's a short commute now. I have the ability to consider if I'm going to hold it now.
Which is good. Always good.
Yeah, that's different for me. Sure enough, I go to the restroom and I hear like this loud bang. And I was like, is someone banging on the bathroom door at 11 o'clock at night? Like, there are plenty others. And then it happened again. And I was like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. And then I heard it kind of consistently starting to go. And I was like, this is a storm. And I went outside and it was wild. But my windshield was pelted all over. It actually busted the plastic, which is very weird in terms of the logistics of how it happened. But the plastic that goes just below your windshield wipers, that's attached to your hood, there's actual holes that went through that. Every angle of my car has hail dents somewhere. And then we'll find out this week if it's totaled. So life has been really good, guys. It's been very stressful.
Did you get the gap insurance on that?
So, John, let me tell you something.
Let's just move on.
When you're switching insurance companies and insurance is already like 3 times the price in other states, sometimes you take it the L. And that L sometimes really screws you over.
And he's laughing at you. What a son of a bitch. What a son. It's like, hey, he forgot all about the positivity from last week. And now he's the Mad Hatter.
Hey, I feel really good right now.
Jesus.
This is dark.
It's a little dark.
This is dark.
No, I honestly feel really bad for you because that is terrible.
It shines through. What about you, Troy? What's new with you? Anything in your world?
No, just working.
Well, that was simple enough.
That was depressing.
We're training for the bike ride. We do this, that's called the MS-150 Tour de Farms in Illinois. So we raise money for multiple sclerosis. That takes place on June 22nd. So just a lot of outside miles.
Is there a link for people? Like, can people that listen?
Yeah, we could throw it up in the Facebook group and on the Discord.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Feel free to share it.
For sure.
It's for a good cause. And how many miles do you have to do?
Well, the ride is called MS-150. The idea is that you ride 75 on Saturday and 75 on Sunday, but you can ride whatever you want during the weekend based on your fitness level.
At least it's not MS-13.
We do 100 on Saturday.
All right, John, you say you work out more than Terry Crews. Can you ride a bike 100 miles?
Probably.
Bullshit.
anybody can ride a bike 100 miles one time. The question is, can you do it 2 days in a row? That's the catch.
Yeah, because you're so sore.
So one of the things I've been doing as far as my training is concerned, I mean, wait, hold on. Before I launch into this, does anyone really give a shit?
This is awkward.
Just to give a little bit of ribbing back to you, no, I don't give a shit at all, John.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure before I launch into like my whole training routine Fair lately. Point. So
okay, let's get into movies and TV. That's what people came to listen to, probably. So it turns out Netflix is making a John Creasy series called Man on Fire. Remember that was a Denzel Washington movie? Dakota Fanning, and they reunited in Equalizer 3. There's a whole thing, but there it follows a special forces mercenary as he adjusts to normal life. And now Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, I got that out one try, will take over for Denzel Washington as John Creasy. And in this adaptation for Netflix, he's going to be the special forces mercenary with a severe PTSD, indicating he's going to follow in the footsteps of Washington's version of the character, who in that film is dealing with alcoholism and guilt regarding his past actions with the CIA. Now, there's a lot of revenge to the storyline in the movie, but I think they're going to build up to that portion. What do you guys think about a Man on Fire series? We're seeing a lot of that these days. We're getting Jack Ryan. We're getting Reacher. We're getting Alex Cross. You know, we're getting a lot of these former movies that are now TV shows. Who's excited about this? Anyone?
Creasy specifically, or the fact that we're getting long form movies?
Either way.
I mean, it's content. It's an interesting character. I mean, the movie wasn't bad. Denzel Washington obviously played it very well. It's just a matter of like, is this something that the general populace is going to go like, ooh, I remember that, and jump all over it and be one of those must watch Netflix binge for that weekend? Probably not. Mm-hmm. You know, people that remember Man on Fire will jump on board, but people that don't know anything about Man on Fire are going to be like, eh, what's this? When Stranger Things coming out? Is Cobra Kai here? Oh yeah, next month. That's right.
It's coming soon. It's coming soon.
It sort of makes sense because there are several sequels to the original book of Man on Fire. There's Perfect Kill, there's Blue Ring, there's Black Horn. So it makes sense for them to go long form with it to be able to really flesh out the story, and they can go pretty good distance with it. So I think it's going to be something that might be just great for Netflix. It'll be something that will go along line with the Nightcaller?
Night Agent.
Night Agent, yes. Yeah. Which was a surprise hit for Netflix for sure.
You know what I want to see? I want to see, and I'm not knocking veterans in any way, shape, or form, okay? I am one, so relax. But I will say, I want to see one where he doesn't have PTSD. He's actually adjusted just fine. And he's just really good at what he does, so he's going to go out there and just keep doing it. I want that story. I mean, I feel like we kind of overdo the PTSD, and it gets written into everything, and sometimes I just want a character to just be the character and not have to have this overlording pathos that so many of these characters have.
Well, I understand it makes the character
more interesting, but what's that?
Isn't Reacher that? He doesn't necessarily show off as having PTSD in the show.
No, but the character never really had any because, you know, he's kind of just the same character he was when he was in the military. He really hasn't changed. So that's probably why I like the idea of that more so, is because Reacher is very much that. And I would like to see more of that instead of always making it seem, don't get me wrong, war does break a lot of men that go, and men and women. And it's definitely something that needs to be addressed. On the same token, there are also a lot of men and women that come back and they're very, very content with serving their country and just want to get back into the world doing what they know, you know? And I think we should tell their stories too.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's an element of, and there's always multiple perspectives for every situation, but seeing the positive spin, or even just the perspective of reentry back into civilian life and the struggle that's presented there. And, you know, I do know of, I guess, not too many vets, but I do know of some vets who are not as lifelong or negatively impacted by their experiences. And, you know, it could be different methods of coping and different experiences in their life that led up to it and all sorts of things. But there are some who don't have that same experience, but all of them are still going to have to reacclimate to civilian life. And I feel like that's definitely a perspective to share.
Well, we'll see what happens with this one. It's interesting. We are also getting a sequel to Practical Magic. Warner Brothers announced a follow-up film to the 1998 Halloween staple, Practical Magic, with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. They're both in talks to return. And if you didn't know, the first movie starred Bullock and Kidman as the witchy Owen sisters who get into some supernatural mischief after Bullock accidentally drugs and kills Kidman's abusive ex-boyfriend, and they have to reanimate his corpse. So I don't know what they're going to do for a sequel, but we're getting another one. And Amanda, you love Hocus Pocus. Is this one on your radar too?
So, true story, I've tried to watch Practical Magic over the last few years, maybe twice, and I just haven't gotten through it, but I want to finish it. I do feel this is riding on the coattails of the Hocus Pocus situation, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, I was not very impressed with Hocus Pocus 2. Oh. So, yeah, it's sometimes it is just too hard to recapture the magic in the bottle. And sometimes we have to be okay with that. And I wish we were okay with that a little bit more. Like, Practical Magic, you know, is maybe something that you could have turned it into a TV show rather than doing a sequel, I guess, if you want to, you know, bring it back to life in some way. But I'm also just getting very exhausted with the same repetitive nature where every time one movie has like success by doing a sequel or by doing something that can be replicated, then everybody else feels the need to do the same for a variety of properties. And I feel like Practical Magic is just one of those because it falls into a similar category as Hocus Pocus. It has a lot of the same viewership and audience members who, you know, like Hocus Pocus also liked Practical Magic. And so I think they're just hoping that it'll have the same effect, but it's definitely not Hocus Pocus, nor do I feel like this is necessary. But I also know there's a lot of people who really, really love Practical Magic and would love to see it come back. So my opinion is also a little less impactful and important because I haven't finished the movie.
I actually really enjoy Practical Magic. And when it comes to Practical Magic versus Hocus Pocus, I tend to enjoy Practical Magic just a little bit more. I like the darker, more serious aspects of it versus what Hocus Pocus does. And if you look at the cast, it has the opportunity of bringing everybody back as far as the main Owens family. And even Evan Rachel Wood was one of the daughters, and you can bring her in as the daughter and have like three generations of the Owens family living under the same house doing magic. I think that would bring a fun layer to it. And if they can find another way to make it not only just a story about witches, but also bring in some of that darkness still, that it would be interesting for sure.
Well, and I think much in the same vein as what we were just talking about on the Netflix series, there are four books, I do believe, in this series from Alice Hoffman. There were two sequels, two prequels that I believe were The Rules of Magic and Magic Lessons. And then there was a sequel that was called The Book of Magic. So in theory, you could make four independent films and build this into a franchise by adapting some of that work. But I agree with John, where I enjoyed Practical Magic much more than Hocus Pocus. I thought Hocus Pocus was campy and it was fun, but Practical Magic just had a whole different feel to it because it wasn't just about the magic piece of it. It was about the fact that they weren't supposed to talk about the fact that they were magic. And it was, you know, trying to solve this relationship challenge that was going on. So there was a lot more depth to the movie, I felt, than just the surface level, haha, funny magic stuff.
Sure.
So, you know, from that perspective, I think there's a lot that could be delved into that from a character perspective, whether it be from, you know, the parental side in the prequels or what might happen with their kids in the future, if, you know, that were to be.
I just want to, all I can think to say is you got Bette Midler and Sarah Jessica Parker, and then you have Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock. I just feel like the pedigree is a little different. So you got better odds.
Yeah. When you put that side by side, let's not be rude to women by any means. But
no, being rude to talent.
Let's also state the obvious here, right? Okay, there are some differences
between the two categories. I'm just saying, two Oscars versus none. That's all I was saying. That's it. No disrespect. And my mother is a huge Bette Midler fan. I mean nothing against Bette Midler either. I'm just saying those two ladies, they have a better pedigree. They have a better record.
Would you call your mother the wind beneath your wings?
She is. Don't all you right, cool. Say sarcastic shit about that song. I will jump through this microphone cord. She is the wind beneath my wings. Great. Now I got to call my mom. All right, so Blumhouse announced six horror games coming out soon as they're expanding their operations. And I'm only mentioning that because I just think it's fascinating how that particular studio has grown exponentially. I mean, Jason Blum has been very, very smart about, I'm going to invest in small horror movies, usually under $5 million budget. And even when he gets big stars, he usually gives them like back end points so that they still keep the budgets very small. So if they do make money, they make a lot of money. And if they don't make money, they don't lose much money. And now they're kind of swaying into games. And I just wonder, do you guys think this is a good business model for them? Troy, what do you think?
I mean, it worked in the reverse for Naughty Dog, you know, where Naughty Dog focused on games and good story that eventually became movies and television. So why shouldn't it work the other way? I mean, at the end of the day, the goal of a game is to tell a good story. And if you can tell a good story in a movie, then there's a good chance you're going to tell a good story in a game. Better just hire the right developers in order to make the gameplay worth the squeeze, I guess.
Well, I would argue that one with you. I don't play games for stories. I honestly, I played every Gears of War game. I barely know what happens. I barely do. I know my chainsaw gun works all the time. So I'm probably not as, I'm not the audience you're speaking to. But most of my friends that are gamers are like you that care more about the story than anything else.
Yeah, because I was not playing Red Dead Redemption 2 because I really liked riding around on my horse. Because you ride around on your horse a lot in that game.
There's so much riding around on your horse.
I was in it for the story, right?
That first one would be a great movie, too. Or miniseries, actually. Limited series. Absolutely.
You know, I think there is really a space for these horror games, though. You can take Resident Evil aside and some of those, but some of the more interactive games, if that's kind of the avenue that they explore and delve into, have become pretty popular. And I've played some of those and they're a lot of fun. So for them, I think it's smart because they're going to tap into their existing audience members who like horror movies and also like video games, and they get to blend those worlds together. So it's an easy pipeline to get those people into purchasing your things. And on top of that, like reading through some of the descriptions of the games, they sound really fun.
Don't they?
Yeah, and they do. They sound really cool. Like even Fear the Spotlight is one where they're two teens are sneaking into a school after hours, and then they learn about a tragedy that takes place decades ago. And it's like, that sounds kind of cool, and you get to explore and probably figure out. And so there's like a mysterious element of exploration there. They have one of them where Robin Fink from Nine Inch Nails is one of the game designers. Ooh. So I'm super curious about that. And it has to do with a first person psychedelic game that takes place in the distant future and follows Katja as she deals with dangerous otherworldly forces.
Oh, so you're high the whole time?
Yeah, just reading through those, they sound very fun and interesting. And like, not only could the story be enticing, but also the gameplay could be a lot of fun. And if they start to incorporate like VR elements, that's also, if correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not the world's biggest gamer, but I think that's still a popular thing.
Virtual reality? I mean, they're still invested in it, so it must be somewhat popular. I don't think it's ever caught on the way that they hoped.
I think that's a big thing to call out because as of the recording of this podcast, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference is currently going on right now. And they just announced, right, Apple Vision Pro back in February, and they're coming out to more countries. So I think we have to change our expectations about what we think a game is as we get more into machine learning language and artificial intelligence and different interface concepts. Because you could be doing like a whole immersive horror experience through VR that I think would probably play much better than just punching it on a controller in front of a TV with other distractions in the environment. To get that immersive experience, you get some real good horror jump scare concepts through that.
That all sounds really fancy, but how about instead of me managing myself, how about they manage their price levels from Apple for that? And then I'll manage my expectations going into games.
Oculus Rift, whatever, any kind of VR technology.
I'm just saying, Apple's got a little crazy out there.
They are a little pricey, a little bit. Hey, I want to tell you before we move on about Shadowland. Okay, so a former president that's haunted by nightmares of an assassination uncovers a conspiracy to discredit his legitimacy. And together with his advisor, they race to expose the truth and avert a global crisis and vindicate his presidency. Stars John Voight. Shadowland is available to buy on digital right now, and it's rated R from Republic Pictures. So definitely go check that out because it sounds terrifyingly entertaining. Also, our show is independently funded, therefore all of the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. If you want to support the show and get extra bonus content, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now let's go to some spoiler-free reviews, and I'm going to start with Bad Behavior, which comes out June 14th in a limited theatrical release.
Yeah, Bad Behavior tells the story of Lucy, played by Jennifer Connelly, a former child actress who seeks enlightenment at a retreat led by a spiritual leader, Elon, played by Ben Whishaw. She also investigates a close yet turbulent relationship with her stunt performer daughter, Dylan, who's played by Alice Englert. And yeah, I'm all about Jennifer Connelly. Like, I feel like she's having like this like really great resurgence between Snowpiercer and Dark Matter on Apple TV, and then she was in the Top Gun Maverick movie. You know, Jennifer Connelly is probably one of the most interesting actresses working based on how her career moved throughout the course of anything. So I'm already in just because her name's attached to it. But What did you like, Aaron, about this story in particular, as they have this weird dynamic between the stunt performer daughter and, of course, this spiritual leader? Sounds very cultish in a lot of ways, yeah, which some Hollywood might consider as that way.
a little bit. It's an interesting dynamic, and it's written and directed by Alice Englert, who also is the daughter in the show, in the movie. And she's also the daughter of Jane Campion, the director, just so you know, fun fact. And it's an interesting dynamic because it's really telling both the story of the mother and the daughter and how their kind of their lives eventually come together in different ways. And it initially starts with Jennifer Connelly's character just trying to find some enlightenment, but she's gone in many respects. Like, she has a lot going on in her head that she is trying to either meditate out or deal with in some positive way, and she just can't seem to do it very well. And her daughter's kind of on the same path, right? She's a stunt woman. She's in the entertainment industry, but she keeps making mistakes like people do. Like, none of these are really horrible mistakes. It's just they are struggling to deal with their choices, and they continue to make choices they should not make. So it's really about the mother and daughter kind of coming to an understanding of sorts. There's a little bit of satire in terms of how the movie progresses. And Jennifer Connelly is she's the firecracker. Like, she dominates every frame. She's the star of the movie, no matter who's in the frame. She has several moments where she just completely loses it, whether it's an emotional outburst, whether it's just there's a scene where Ben Whishaw is basically as this weird cultish leader telling them to get with a partner, and the partner is the mother and you're the baby, and they're basically like just doing this exercise. And Jennifer Connelly has this massively emotional scene that I think if you have anybody less talented, it would not work in any way. You would be laughing at it, right? It would be hysterical. But because it's Jennifer Connelly and she can act her ass off, she just crushes it and really just like brings you into the soul of this woman. I will say the movie languishes a little bit, pacing's a little, you know, it could be tightened up, but Alice Englert, it's her first movie, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I believe we remember Alice being in Beautiful Creatures. What do you think of her performance transcending from that movie to this movie? And does she play the part of, you know, in the movie plus writer plus director? Does she get in her own way, or does she kind of navigate that fairly well, especially at such a young age?
No, she's very good. They have a good relationship, and you can tell she definitely has a very specific vision for her films, for her story. And I think she's trying to tell a much deeper story. It's just, you know, there are some things. She could tighten up the pacing. I think you can get to moments a little faster or a little clearer. But that comes with experience, right? This is literally her first full-length feature, and I think she does a very good job.
What was the most surprising thing about the movie? Like, when you watched it, were you like, wow, this is like really worth going to see because of this moment? Or is it just kind of like, yeah, you know?
There's literally a moment about halfway through the movie where you think this movie is going one way and it completely shifts gears. And then it's just like, oh shit, that just happened. So it definitely has one of those moments where I was completely taken out of my chair. And it's one of those where I call it a re-engagement moment, where you're in it, but you're not loving it at this point. You like it, but you know, it can be, and then a moment happens that just gets you re-engaged, right? Gets you fired up. It has one of those moments in it that really kind of reignites the movie.
I mean, cults are always eerie. Is there any sound kind of, you know, environment that is used in this movie to kind of put you in a specific mindset?
Not so much. It's really challenges? Just, it's more about the mother and the daughter. It's really not about, she's trying to find enlightenment. Yes. And they have some conversations about what is enlightenment and trying different exercises to reach enlightenment, but it's really not about that weird cult. It's really about the mother and the daughter coming together.
That's good. All right. We'll have $10 full price of admission. What are you giving Alice Englert's first writing and directing full length feature film?
I am giving Bad Behavior $6. I think it is a slow burn. So if you're somebody that doesn't enjoy a slow burn character pieces, I don't know if you're going to love it, but if you are into those, it's a really interesting mother-daughter tale, especially for mothers and daughters that have a fractured relationship. Boom. All right. So moving on, Let's go to Bad Boys, Bad Boys. What you gonna do? This time, the Bad Boys, Marcus and Mike, have to deal with clearing their captain after he's been framed as he was on the payroll of the cartel, allegedly. Known here just as the cartel. That's all they call them. There's like no real names or anything. I guess that's what cops do now. They're like, oh, we gotta get the cartel. Well, who's the cartel? All of them. Okay. So you have ammo from the last film. You got Mike's son, and you even get Reggie in on the action, which I will say, if you're a fan of the Reggie character and the little bits he's played, he gets a full class redemption arc in this movie. It's awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
And they need to clear everybody's name. So obviously, you know, we're not going to spend 25 minutes on Bad Boys for Life. The movies are all kind of very similar in how they are. But how does this one rate for you, John? You saw it too. What did you think of Bad Boys Ride or Die?
This was a return to form for the for this whole story, because if you watch the third movie, hit or miss, right? It's not, it's got its moments.
I liked the
not
third one a lot. So
did you?
I did. Yep.
All right. Well, I didn't enjoy the third one as much as I enjoyed the other ones. It could have been my state of mind. It could have been just the fact that it would, you know, who knows. But this one felt like
it was, if you didn't like it, you didn't like it. It's all good.
Well, anyhow, this one felt like it was a return to form.
Why? What was different about this one, in your opinion?
I felt like this one was great because the dynamic between Martin Lawrence and Will Smith was on point, and it was very much like the second movie, where the second movie you had Martin Lawrence kind of doing this bit where he's not exactly fitting in with Will Smith's nasty Mike thing, you know, and Martin's doing more of the he's got the funnier moments, or some of the funnier moments. He's got some of the more spiritual aspects of it, where it's a lot of what was happening in the second movie, where he was doing the woosah and all that other jazz. You know, it's a lot like the second. Actually, it's very much like a carbon copy of the second movie, and that's not a bad thing to say.
Yes and no. I do think this movie, it's funny. I think the opening here is a complete flip-flop of the third movie. It's literally the same opening, but they just flip characters and they go kind of a different, more spiritual direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the directors, Adil El Arbi and Bilal Fallah, they are the ones that came in here after Michael Bay for the third movie and on the fourth movie. I think they really have a good handle on the characters. They seem to really understand this world, and they're making attempts to build the world up by incorporating Mike's son and by incorporating the guys from the ammo division of the police force. And I like Vanessa Hudgens here, Alexander Ludwig, you know, Eric Dane is a good villain. You know, you've got a lot of, and Armando, Mike's son, I think he's great. Jacob Scipio, I believe is his name. They're all great. Like, it's very Fast Five-ish, I think, here. I feel like they're building this world to be a little bigger, where Mike and Marcus can just tell the jokes and the young kids can do a lot of the action, except maybe Will Smith, because he's still got a few steps. Martin Lawrence, just go ahead and get your hot dog at the gas station. You're not an action star anymore. It's fine. You know? But I really enjoyed it, man. I had so much fun, and they even have a Will Smith slap joke in here. They do. A big one.
Yeah, they really do. Everybody was really on point. One of the things that I like the most is a lot of the tricks that they did with the camera. There's a lot of drone usage here where there's this beautiful... this very creative use of a drone shot where it's all done in one shot, where you have the different people of the ammo team are fighting in different locations, and it happens to be in the spiral of the building, and you have the drone come in and it's flying over everyone's head and going up over through the sequence of the fight, and it's very kinetic and it's very action oriented. It's done so well that you almost don't realize that that's what you're looking at, but you almost want to be like, is this like some sort of crazy CGI thing? And no, it's all practical. It just happens to be using a cinema drone on it and getting the shot that way. The gun harnesses that they had, or the camera harnesses, to be able to flip the camera back and forth from them.
Yep.
They had this camera harness that the camera's on rails. And when you could be looking at Mike at one moment And then you can, he pushes the camera away from him, flips it around, and you're looking from the point of view of the gun as he's shooting.
And very first person oriented in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. Done so well. I'm very happy with what they're doing with the practical effects on this. It's just, it's a lot of fun and it helps keep the energy going.
And there's a great set piece on a helicopter where, you know, there's basically it's an action scene in a helicopter. I think that's a great set piece. There's a lot of fun set pieces here. And I will say, like, the first 15 minutes, which does feel like, okay, we're just regurgitating what happened in the last movie. This is silly. And I really just I was really struggling there for a little bit. I didn't find it funny. I didn't think the jokes were firing. I didn't feel like the story was going anywhere. And then about 15 or 20 minutes in, I don't know what happened, but I just found it. Just found the rhythm. And it became like hella fun. And the rest of the way, man, laughs, action, and more laughs. A lot of laughs. I was actually really surprised that some of the jokes were very funny. Martin Lawrence is crushing it. And he's got a long situation throughout the film where he just, you know, he can't eat certain foods. But, man, every time he does, it's like his wet dream. It's just hysterical. And also, I think one of the more realistic examples of a panic attack I've seen in a movie. So that kind of thing I thought was pretty fun and fresh to keep the movie interesting. So they still got it in them. They could do another one. I'd watch another one for sure.
I would watch after this one. I'd definitely watch another one. I'd like to see what they do as far as building out this team.
Now, $10 full price admission. What do you give Bad Boys Ride or Die?
I give it $7.
I go $7.50. I had a blast. Now, one more, and then we'll move on to the topic. This is, what are we talking about? Hitman. Yeah, Hitman. Gary Johnson is the most sought-after professional killer in New Orleans. And to his clients, he's like something out of a movie. The mysterious gun for hire. But if you pay him to rub out a cheating spouse or an abusive boss, you better watch out because he works for the cops. He's actually a teacher that moonlights as a hitman to bust people, to bust perps. And eventually he does break protocol to help a desperate woman trying to flee an abusive husband, and he finds himself becoming one of his own false personas and then falling for the woman and flirting with her and possibly becoming a criminal. Stars Glenn Powell and Adria Arjona as Madison. It's directed by Richard Linklater. It's on Netflix. And I got to say, there's been a lot of talk about this movie. It's got extremely high critic score, extremely high audience score. People are raving about it. And man, I was pleasantly surprised. This is nothing that I thought it was going to be. It's not an action movie. It's not a crime thriller. It's really a rom-com. John, you saw it. You agree?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, you're right. It really is like a rom-com. It's you can look at it that way. You can also look at it as a kind of a coming-of-age story as somebody spends some time trying to find himself, which is interesting because he's finding himself by being other people. It's done so well. And one of the things that I love so much about it was just the level of range that you see Glenn Powell exhibit through this as he's becoming all these different characters to
easily his best performance, I would say, of anything I've seen him in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so many things that he's doing here that just like, just pops off the screen, especially when you look at his primary character where he seems kind of meek and small. But as the movie progresses, you can tell that he's growing and he's becoming more because of what he's doing. And it actually shows very well on film.
The only thing that's a little ridiculous is, hey, look, he's still Glenn Powell. You can give him a geeky haircut. And even with a geeky haircut, he looks like a stud. It's a bit of a ridiculous aspect. It's kind of like putting Rachel Lee Cook in, She's All That.
Oh, and She's All That, where you put her in glasses.
Glasses and she's supposed to be hideous and ugly or something. I'm like, that's what they're trying to do with Glenn Powell. It's like, no, it's not working. He's a handsome dude. He's just a good looking guy. Just because he slicks his hair back. Oh, now he's handsome. Okay. He's a good looking dude. But he's also a very good actor, I think, in this movie. I was very impressed and surprised. I really like his chemistry with Madison. And I really would recommend this one. Like, I get why people are raving about it. I get why people are recommending it. It takes some turns. It actually goes in a couple places I was surprised by, which is so nice in anything that's a rom-com. Just so nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sexy movie. The chemistry is palpable. I mean, And it's on Netflix. Netflix, and granted, they bought this. This isn't a Netflix original. They actually had to buy it.
So they I like can try it. I had to throw that jab in there.
Yeah, man, because the Netflix originals are not great. But this is, I would say this is a great movie. I really, really love this movie.
Yeah, I really loved it too. And I think the chemistry is one thing that really just like, it's a lot. You can cut the chemistry with a knife. It comes off of the screen so much. Everything about it, you forget about the other characters when these two are on the screen together. It's a lot.
Wow. If $10 full price mission, what do you give Hitman? I give it $8.
I gave it $8 also.
Okay. Copycat. All right, let's go to upcoming attractions. Troy, turn it back over to you so I can stop talking.
Sounds good. Well, Apple TV Plus is getting a new series with Jake Gyllenhaal and Peter Sarsgaard called Presumed Innocent. It's a gripping series, takes viewers on a journey through the horrific murder that upends the Chicago prosecuting attorney's office when Chief Deputy Prosecutor Rusty Sabich, played by Gyllenhaal, is suspected of the crime. The series explores obsession, sex, politics, and the power and limits of love. As the accused fights to hold his family and marriage together, what's going to happen? You'll find out on June 12th.
Did you see the movie, the original movie with Harrison Ford?
No, I did not.
Okay, so you might still be surprised. I'm really hoping they have modified the ending in some way, because if I watch that whole show just because I like Jake Gyllenhaal, it's the same ending, I'm going to be pissed.
Well, I mean, if Defending Jacob was anything, you know, they changed the endings, so.
It's true. Good call.
Bratz over on Hulu will drop on June 13th. That's right. Everybody's favorite Brat Pack, which everybody really wanted to be in, except all the people that were in the Brat Pack themselves. Back in the 1980s, director Andrew McCarthy reunites with Demi Moore, Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, Ally Sheedy, and more for this original documentary. I am here for it.
Remember when we met Andrew McCarthy?
I sure do.
On the set of The Blacklist? Yeah.
It basically went something like this. It was like Andrew McCarthy walks over. He's like, who are these yahoos on my set? Uh-huh. And we were like, hi, Mr. McCarthy. So nice to meet you. Thank you for us being here today. In the meantime, in our heads, we're like, oh my God, it's Andrew McCarthy.
And remember, he goes, hi, I'm Andrew. And I'm like, yeah, of course you are. He was a very nice guy. Very nice dude.
Very nice guy. And for Blacklist fans, you'll be pleasantly surprised with a cameo that may happen in season 10. If you make it that far.
If you get there.
Inside Out 2 hits, and of course, I will be a puddle of crying emotions on the floor because this was one of my most traumatic theater experiences ever for the first movie. So for Father's Day weekend, you can take your daughters along as they ride on a whole new teenage experience for Riley, who may or may not be feeling all kinds of new emotions herself. Definitely going to be checking out this one. Most of the original voice cast is returning, so check out Inside Out 2 from Pixar. It just may save the studio.
Can I ask you a question about that?
You bet.
You've been saying for a long time, if Pixar wants to be successful in the theater again, they need to get back on Father's Day weekend.
Yes.
Do you still hold true to that? You still think that's going to work here?
I think yes, especially for this movie and because of the whole teenager daughter concept, you know, dad's being there.
Yeah,
and that whole parental concept. So absolutely, I think that's going to help out. I think this gets back to the root of, like, I was never a big fan of, like, a second Toy Story or a second Monsters or a second Nemo, but those work for some reason. This one, I think, has the ability to do that second thing and be just as good, especially because we're talking about different emotions as you grow older. Mm-hmm. You could even get to an Inside Out 3 when they're in college. You can do an Inside Out 4 when they're an adult. So this has
Disney's writing this down potential. As they're listening. Hang on. College? All right. Adult? What about elderly homes? How about retirement homes? We got one in there, huh?
Totally. For sure. And then he can, you know, somehow it ties into Up.
Sure. By the time they're in retirement home, they're literally inside out. So.
Yeah. I think this is something that Pixar needs. And I think they also need to focus on just one movie a year instead of I think they started to derail when they went to two movies a year with, like, The Good Dinosaur. Because I think The Good Dinosaur gets a little bit of a bad rap because it was the second Pixar movie that year. And it's really a great
movie. That's a good movie, yeah.
We also have Treasure in a limited theatrical release coming out June 14th. The story takes place in 1990s Poland and follows Ruth, played by Lena Dunham, an American music journalist, and her father, Edek, played by Stephen Fry, a charmingly stubborn Holocaust survivor on a journey to his homeland, While Ruth is eager to make sense of her family's past, Eric embarks on a trip with his own agenda. And then one more documentary for you to round out the week on June 19th on Netflix. Black Barbie was more than just a doll. Black Barbie actually celebrates the momentous impact three black women at Mattel had on the evolution of the Barbie brand as we know it. Through these charismatic insiders' stories, the documentary tells the story of how the first ever black Barbie came to be in 1980, examining the importance of representation and how the dolls can be crucial to the formation of identity as well as imagination.
My wife is very excited about that one.
Anything I've been like in a documentary kick, personally. I like the documentary concept. So Brat Pack, Black Barbie, all those are falling in line. There was a Jim Henson one, obviously, that was released on Disney Plus recently. That was really good. I'm liking the documentary trend lately.
Where are we on Acolyte? Have you guys caught up on that yet? On Disney
Plus? Just the first two. I haven't seen the third episode yet.
Are we happy so far? I like it so far. Don't love it, but I like it. No?
It's too early to tell.
All right. Johnny, you watching it or are you still Star Wars'd out?
I'm Star Wars'd out. I'm not watching it.
Okay. Well, no, we don't care about what you think then. Let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Now we're going to discuss nitpicks or cliches, however you want to look at it. Okay. We had a debate about this earlier. We don't need to do that again. We can, if you want, Troy. Do you want to arm wrestle? We can arm wrestle.
We can totally arm wrestle.
While you're watching a movie or TV series or ones you hear about that you think are ridiculous and not necessarily casting or story related, think of it like this, right? So The Acolyte, a lot of people were having a real problem with a character dealing with a fire in space on a spaceship. She's on the top of a spaceship and there's fire, open fire. They had an issue with it because you can't have fire in space, even though the Death Star kind of went kabooey, you know, in space, but whatever. Those kinds of things, you know, those things where you have you're watching something, a movie or a television show, and then some little thing happens that completely just takes you out of it, bothers you, irritates you, frustrates you. It just for whatever reason, maybe it's your own internal monologue. Maybe it's really not that big a thing, but it gets you. And we'll round robin as we talk about it. But does everybody understand what I'm talking about? Or they think they understand what I'm talking about now?
I feel like it's just general annoyances. Like something that's really stupid, makes no sense. How are we logically making this occur? That's the way I interpret it, at least.
I find it to be something that I think about when the movie's already suffering for me. There are moments where it could be a great movie and I still notice it, but I can then forget about it and move on. But for the most part, if a movie's already suffering, then I can't stop thinking about it. Or if it's not doing anything to make up for it, I can't stop thinking about it. Those are the sort of things that can get me. But ultimately, I'm pretty forgiving when it comes to a movie because thing is like,
and as soon as I see it, I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
For me, I'm like, well, it's in the script, so I'm going to go ahead and get past it.
Like, just recently when I saw Strangers Chapter 1, I was enjoying it for a little bit. And then there's multiple times, I already talked about this, where there's like six times I kept count of where, why didn't someone do a thing and they would be out of this completely? But the first time that happens where somebody doesn't call the police and they literally have seen, that's not even the first time, but when it happens, somebody doesn't call the police because they see somebody in the house, but then they're convince themselves they didn't see somebody in the house, they don't call the police. You lose me. Like if you're horrified and you don't call for help, I just, you're probably deserve whatever's going to happen in a movie, not in real life.
it's coming for you.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about when characters call someone else. I think it actually might be The Strangers where she calls her husband instead of calling the police.
That's the original one. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And it's like, what are we doing here? Everything would be different if you were just a little bit more logical. Call the police and then call your husband, or like do both, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, no offense, but I don't care how tough your significant other is. If they're literally not there, they're probably not going to be much help to you. Where a police officer could get there rather quickly. They got lights, right? And a whole help them get there faster. I think that's lean that direction.
Also come with paramedics, which is good.
And guns with training. Just saying, you know, usually that's Usually, it's not a bad thing. Not here for a dissection of the police officers. I'm talking about movie cops.
I mean, longtime listeners will probably understand that I'm like Spock, Vulcan. Aaron calls me a robot because logic dictates. So when you have the thing in the movie that defies the logic of how logic should work, and that basically is the entire setup of the movie itself, that's usually when it's like, eh. So it's those types of things for me where it's like, yeah, that specifically was written in order to make it happen, and that just doesn't work if you think about it. But then sometimes there's nitpicks where you're like, well, maybe I'm overthinking it, because really the nitpick really isn't a nitpick. And so then you just start nitpicking the nitpick at the same time.
It's like Inception.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Well, let's talk about some of these. And also, we asked listeners in our in the groups on Discord and Facebook, and they had some pretty good ones. But I just kind of want to go through and discuss with you guys. Like, I would say one thing that bothers me, riding on a motorcycle or driving a car with a top down, very fast speeds, and nobody's wearing a helmet or sunglasses and somehow can see completely. They're not blinded. I have the same problem when people come out of the water and they don't have to wipe their eyes. I'm like, what? This just doesn't make any sense to me. And you should be blinded for at least a minute. Nobody?
I'm picturing James Bond coming out of the water in Casino Royale. And he didn't wipe his eyes at all when he's like coming out dripping wet. Not, you know, those tight
sexy
underwear.
I get it.
Like bathing suit.
Just looks perfect.
Yeah.
This looks perfect. I'm sorry, but real people are like, they're scrubbing their eyes. They're like, ah, they don't look sexy like that. Just coming out of the water that way.
Especially when they're in the ocean.
Right, because there's pee there.
Yeah, they're doing snot rockets to get the water out of their nose.
I was kind of going with salty water is actually too. Really painful in your eyes compared to chlorine
pee.
Water.
Salty pee.
Do you want to talk about this pee thing, Aaron?
I'm just saying there's pee in the ocean, man. Like, that's what they do there. It's literally the okay. fish bathroom.
There's also pee in the pools.
There's Aaron? Enough chlorine to clean that up.
Which is why you pee in your pool?
No, that's why I pee in other people's pool. Never pee in my own. Gross. That's just not right. I kid.
Don't pee in my pool. I'm going to swim in your toilet.
Stop. So throw out some examples.
Kids. All right. So one of the things that drives me nuts. Yeah, here's one that drives me nuts about romantic comedies. If we would just stop and have a conversation before we get into this like unnecessary fight, you can actually like get to the great part of a relationship so much sooner rather than like this whole we don't know what's going on, we can't talk to each other now. If you just stop. Have a conversation, sit there and tell what actually happened and take the moment and time to listen to it. We wouldn't be going through half of these romantic movies issues.
I can't stand that. I just can't stand when there's like, you could have six words and the movie would be 5 minutes long. Oh no, I didn't say that. Oh, you didn't? Because I thought you said, no. Okay. Well, I guess we're good now. You know, we made up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not how it works for women, though.
Well, why don't you go ahead and speak for all women, Amanda? I can't.
I'm not going to speak for all women, but I am going to say, even if women find out that they were wrong, they're not just going to move along.
Because we still have to be wrong?
That question that led them there, is still that question still exists.
Even if they know they're wrong?
Oh, 100%.
Let's dissect
a lot
this.
Of women dig deeper, and they're like, I'm stubborn, so I can't be wrong.
I feel like this is not a healthy relationship that you're in if this is what we're doing here. Like
probably.
At some point, it's okay to admit, you know what? I called that wrong. It happens. I'm sorry. No, you don't think that's okay?
Well, I mean, it's definitely okay. I just don't think it happens very often, especially in movies. That would defeat the whole purpose.
It's true. I like when they get petty.
It would defeat the whole purpose of the movie. Absolutely true.
Well, everybody knows that, but on the same token, I think that you could write it better, though. I do think there are better ways to write those situations to where it's not so... Like, Hitman, there is a little bit of miscommunication to a degree, but it's handled a lot better than most rom-coms do, and I think more romantic comedies need to do that and be less, let's just do the same thing we've seen in every other movie and handle it more like a real conversation. Like, what would a real conversation be like? I don't know why they're so afraid to have what sounds like real people talking in romantic comedies, because You know what? That is, to me, a lot more appealing than a bunch of people that are not speaking like I would ever expect anyone to speak.
But if they talk that way, would it not be a romantic drama rather than a comedy?
They can make jokes as they do it.
Yeah, I mean, they can make the comedy instead of it being having to be about the relationship itself, about being the situation that the relationship's getting into or something.
Just be funny if she's very pretty, tell her she's ugly, that kind of thing. Make jokes.
Do not neg women. Don't listen to Aaron's advice. He just got lucky with his wife. It's not because he negged her.
I'm just saying.
On the topic of relationships, though, one of my biggest pet peeves, and this one really comes from The Notebook as my prime example.
Oh, God.
Affair love triangles where we're supposed to root for the two involved in the affair. Yeah. And I'm so torn with The Notebook because they really do have such a beautiful story. Sans the love affair where she cheats on the guy she's engaged to with old boy.
Well, he was the right one though, right? I think it's okay to have an affair if it's the right one. It's okay if it's the right one. That's okay then.
Yeah.
But what, wasn't the other one the right one before? Like,
hey, it's the right one till the next right one. That's how it works.
That's exactly how it works. Like, so there's a lot of other problems with The Notebook other than just the fact that they, you know, like she cheated on her fiance to be with him and, you know, whatnot. Like, it's a bad relationship at the beginning. It is not pretty.
There's very unhealthy and toxic.
Exactly. There's nothing good about that relationship. And for people to be like, I want a relationship like that, you guys are fucking crazy.
Well, I think
that's why we have trauma therapy now, because of The Notebook, and people got into those relationships.
And people can't just walk it off anymore.
I want a Harley Quinn and Joker relationship. You all nuts.
It wasn't just because of The Notebook.
But a fair movie, like, that's a thing for you all the time, right, Amanda? In terms of if they're, mm-hmm. it's hard for you to root for that relationship if that's how it happens.
If you're, and I'm not trying to make it sound like none of this happens in reality, because it does happen in reality, but we also can't just blindly accept those things as being okay. Like, we also have to acknowledge, like, hey, that was also kind of shitty of what we did. And that's never acknowledged in those movies because they're just focusing on the relationship that's established out of the affair. And ultimately, I don't think that we should be, I guess it depends on your perspective, but for me personally, when we're watching a movie about romance, the last thing that I want to be rooting for or investing in is someone who has betrayed or broken trust. Because if I'm rooting for you guys, I want to root for it because it's been awesome. You know what I mean? Not because you cheated on them and got with somebody else. It just makes it too hard to, like, root for those people, even in real life.
It's, you even know what I mean? Yeah.
I, you know, there's a movie.
It's even worse, I believe, when they always, if they are in a relationship and they have somebody come, like, take Wedding Crashers, right? You got Owen Wilson shows up and he's all about Rachel McAdams. And it seems like Rachel McAdams seems to be the main point here. Like, she obviously is the problem because she's in both of these movies. But what I'm saying is,
she's just too pretty and she's wanted.
She's honestly amazing. She's literally amazing. I mean, I fall in love with her and everything she ever does. So you have Owen Wilson who's pining for her and he goes to her house and everything else. But the only reason it's okay is because Bradley Cooper is an absolute prick in the movie. They always have to try to justify it by having the other one be an absolute prick or a jerk or an abuser or whatever. Never, you're awesome. Like, this guy was actually awesome. And it just so happened she chose different, you know, which does happen too. I would rather see some of that, because I get kind of taken out of it when it's all, oh, great. Of course, she's a jerk. So this is going to be okay in everyone's eyes.
Yeah, the justification of it all. Like, I think what you and I are in alignment on is how interesting or real would it feel if we were in these movies acknowledging that this isn't great, what we're doing here in this affair situation, and or that, hey, this person was actually a good person and you guys just weren't compatible.
Sure.
It just didn't work out. The people weren't happy or whatever it may be. And, you know, they communicated, hey, I'm out of here, whatever.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies that a movie that I really enjoy is a movie with Daniel Radcliffe called What If? And I think they handled this whole situation pretty well in this movie. It's him and, Zoe Kazan, and, they meet at a party and they become friends. And throughout the majority of the movie, they are friends, but he ends up falling in love with her, but she's in a relationship, with Ray Spall. And Ray Spall is not depicted as a bad guy, or even he doesn't treat her poorly. The only thing that ends up happening is that his and Zoe Kazan's character's life just kind of go literally in different directions as he moves to a different country. But they're trying to keep their relationship long distance. And, it's a good situation, because Daniel Radcliffe never really tells his feelings until the very last minute, or that he can possibly say what his feelings are for Chantry, who's Zoe Kazan's character. But it's never about Ben, who's her fiance or boyfriend. It's never about Ben being a bad guy. It's just about the fact that the two of them just built this love that, out of being friends with each other. So I think that's a better way of handling it versus the way they handle it in most other movies.
I want it to be more realistic, where that finally happens and then she just looks at him and goes, "No, you're friend zoned," and then walks away and the movie's over. Boom. That's my kind
of movie. That's the romantic comedy right there.
That's my kind of movie. Because I would laugh. I would be like, nobody expected that. And then everybody in the audience is like, this movie sucks. It's not supposed to end. Brr. Troy, you've been quiet.
Yeah, I think one of mine that comes to mind is the concept of the thing that is going to kill the bad guy is seemingly completely overlooked by the bad guy. Like, you walk into it and the whole premise of how to actually beat the bad guy is literally laid out and you're like, why doesn't the bad guy do anything about that? It just seems weird. The one that comes to mind is the Lord of the Rings, the fact that Sauron had like nobody guarding this one volcano. Like, it's one entrance on one volcano and there's nobody guarding the door.
That's true.
Yeah. To let people, you know, be, go ahead, come on in, do what you need to do. It's totally fine. But like I said, this is like me nitpicking the nitpick. And I'm like, well, maybe Sauron didn't need to protect the door, because he knew that the ring was so powerful that no one would ever actually be able to drop it in there. And so the fact that it does fall in was only by a chance accident that these two people were fighting over it. And so really Sauron got killed because of a chance, not because of actual plotting or planning.
This is the most Troy thing to ever happen, for him to say his opinion and then talk himself out of his opinion in real time.
It's true. Like, that was legit. I like it.
But yeah, the whole bad guy just was like, yeah, whatever. This is how you beat me. It's like every Mario game ever.
It's like every Mario game. Hey,
there's an axe behind me. Use that to chop the bridge.
And the camera zooms and pans over to it. It's like hidden right behind them or something. But you got that not so subtle information right there.
That's funny. Oh, my God. Another one that bothers me, we were talking about romantic comedies, is sheet sex. I don't like sheet sex, where the character has like a perfectly placed sheet after sex. It completely takes me out of it. I'm like, all right, we're taking this emotional moment. These two are into it. They just had sex. They're smoking cigarettes. They're doing shots, whatever the hell they're doing, but they're also laying in bed. He has a perfectly folded sheet over his midsection. She has one over her upper section that goes all the way down. Like, I get it. You have a no nudity clause. That's fine. Can we shoot this somewhat different in some way? Because it takes me completely right out of the movie. Like, this is not how people would lay in a bed. They just would not. I've never in my life laid in a bed after anything, or even on my own, where I had perfectly folded sheets over my chest.
I feel in those situations, what actually drives me more crazy, I know what you're saying, but what drives me more crazy is when somebody is giving head and goes under the sheet and suffocates themselves in the body heat. Nobody's doing that, because nobody can breathe, and that doesn't sound like a good time. You already cannot breathe during the activity. Why would you make it harder on yourself? And then they just pop their head up real quick. I'm going down on you. What? Get back to work.
It's also a perfectly folded sheet, so you know it's also tucked in on the side.
Oh, sure,
so
of course.
How does it rise so high up into the air?
Absolutely. And it's always after a nice, long, healthy run.
Or
a couple hours at the gym. I'm like, this is not how it works. Nope.
Gym sex, ew. Or like activity sex. Like, come on, guys. Yeah. You've been working out. Like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, they're doing all of this bombastic action sequences. And then they're like, yeah, let's do this right now. All right. It's like, this is how you get an infection.
That's true.
Hold on. Those two people looked sexy as hell when they got all sweaty. I don't blame them for banging it out.
You can see the sweat, but
you smell it. You smell it. They stink.
You know what? I would put money on the fact that when Angelina Jolie sweats, it smells like cookies.
You would be out some money, because that's just not how science works. Oh.
You haven't seen Pushing Tin. She smells like airplane jet fuel.
Ew. Ew.
I have seen Pushing Tin, and I forgot all about that.
So did she, I'm sure. People that are knocked unconscious, that's something that just takes me out of a movie, because stop it. That's just not how that works. And you would have a concussion or brain damage, and you definitely can't do it repeatedly to multiple people. It might work on one guy if you get lucky, but go find a buddy and try to knock him out. You just hit him on the head until he actually goes unconscious. And I'm just letting you know, I am not paying for your lawyer. This is on you. But if you do it, it's going to take a lot of whacks to get him to pass out. It's just not something that happens. It's just ridiculous. So it takes me out of it. And don't do that, please. If anyone's actually thinking about it, just don't do it.
It's a lot of fun to watch. You sit there and you see Indiana Jones is like punching out every other guy with every single swing. Even when he is like barely able to run.
It's ridiculous. I don't care who's doing it.
Maybe on the other human condition side of things, it's the giant monster is supposed to eat human whole, like the T-Rex eating the ship captain in the Lost World Jurassic Park. But yet there's a piece of the body still left behind, like the hand.
Me too, John. Every time he kept talking and saying more words, it just got worse.
All I kept, wait, swallows a human whole? What? I needed more words. I know
there weren't any sheets in Lost World Jurassic Park. So,
you mean like they're eating, but parts of them are left, right?
Yeah, he should be able to just boom, and then the person is gone. But yet, there's always like a toe or a foot or a hand. Or
we need to prove that they were there. Yeah, that's exhausting.
Yeah, you need proof that something gory happened, not just the amount of blood that's everywhere.
I want to see a velociraptor just eat a human's whole. Pick one. I don't care which one. I just want to see.
About velociraptors, they aren't that big.
No, but they got teeth, man.
Wow. What if we have a velocipastor who does it?
They could eat your whole.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, I'm absolutely. And whole. They could do both.
But
I'm pretty sure he did eat a hole in that movie.
You could eat your holy hole. Wait, what?
On that note, crime scenes where zero people who are in charge of the scene follow any protocols.
Oh, yeah, they just walk through it. They just walk right through it.
They're like, this looks like evidence. Let me put this in my mouth and taste it. What?
It's cocaine.
This must be cocaine, guys. How did we get here? Who made the decision? Why do you still have a job? And also, are you on drugs every day?
Put his finger in the cocaine and dip it on his tongue. Yep, that's cocaine, all right.
Exactly. Or they're like, let me touch this because it looks like blood. Oh, is this the weapon used to murder? Let me put my fingerprints directly on it everywhere.
Oh, man.
Or even worse, they pick it up and they put it in the evidence bag.
But they don't
put their gloves on first.
I'll tell you what, I get more mad whenever you get anyone who, shows up, there's a body, there's a knife in them, whatever, and they touch the weapon, which still happens in movies and TV shows all the time. None of us would be stupid enough to do this, correct? Like, we can all safely say, if I come home, my wife, if anything's happened to her, I'm not touching anything in that, I'm leaving. Even if she's breathing, I might have to go out. I'm like, I don't know, man, they're still going to frame me for this. I'm kidding. I would save you, honey, I promise.
Absolutely. There's no way. There's no way I would go walking into a house if I see like all that and I'm like, oh, there's blood everywhere. I got to keep walking in. Nope. I am not going to do that.
It's wild. It's absolutely wild, but they still do it. And then they're like, oh no, I'm the number one suspect. Well, you touched the knife. As far as I'm concerned, you did it. I'm sorry. You gave up any chance away from this. Also,
if you learn nothing from Shawshank Redemption, it's don't be anywhere near a crime scene that involves your spouse, ex or regular.
Don't pick up their body and rub the blood all over your face and your shirt and then wonder why you're incriminated for the murder.
Feels very extreme, but I think at that point,
they'll like that's put on you. Oh my God, you're dying. Let me put your face right here and like rub all the blood from your dead body all over my clothes. And then the cops show up in 3 minutes after that happens, right when they die. And yeah, they're like, sir, what are you doing? Why do you have the weapon sitting next to you and blood all over your body?
That's
she got killed.
You just nudge them with your foot, and if they don't move, walk out.
They stumble into the room, and they like pick him up like, oh, my dead spouse. And they're like sobbing into their chest. And it's like, in the meantime, literally, every piece of DNA is like all over their clothes.
For that matter, you walk in, you see your friend who's been stabbed, still alive. And like, they're like, hey, I got stabbed. And the first thing you do is pull the knife out. That's not good.
Yes. Horrible.
Or you're being chased in the woods and you do the same thing. It's like, well, you're going to bleed out, stupid. So that's on you.
Mm-hmm. Number one, never, ever take out something that is an impaled wound. You leave it in there.
It is containing your injury. Leave it.
I learned nothing else from 20 some years of Grey's Anatomy. That's the one thing I learned.
That's the one. That's what you walked away from.
Do not back up the ambulance when you're pinned between the vehicles.
Oh, Troy, I have such a good one for you later that goes to medical shows.
Go for it. You're already there. Go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. I didn't know if we were going in an order or if this is just like
we lost the order a long time ago when we're in
conversation. It's all good.
Okay, so medical devices that somehow revive people that have been deceased for like 4 minutes and are definitely brain damaged at the very least, but somehow they come back and they're... Oh, I can breathe again. I'm alive. But also, when the TV shows end the season on a massive cliffhanger while simultaneously introducing a completely new storyline that we have to now invest in, pick one or the other, end one of the storylines. I feel like Grey's Anatomy does this all the time, too. Like, we're going to have this storyline continue for 4 seasons and introduce a new one every single time. Like, can we wrap something up
here? Finish what we start first before we move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Or like, also, no offense, Grey's Anatomy, which is funny because I watch every season. No offense.
I feel like you're all attacking Grey's Anatomy now at this point.
Yeah, I'm all offense.
It is now legitimately a religious hate watch every week.
It is. Yeah. But medical shows.
Why can't these people in this hospital die so they close this place? Jesus.
I mean, they had a bomb in the place and it still didn't kill the show. Let's like figure something out here. Can we drop a missile on Grace Sloan?
But the thing that's really taken me out of the show over the last handful of years has been these medical shows blatantly bringing in political or controversial topics into the show with their perspective. Sure. I don't mind if you're trying to introduce information and share both perspectives, but they started to really get very isolated in the viewpoint and what they were demonstrating in the show. Like, you know how the writers feel about the topic.
And think it's specifically like, about like the mobile pregnancy abortion storyline in Grey's. That's probably the most recent one. Yeah,
and it's like, guys, I'm with you, but can we just not incorporate this? Like, sometimes I just want to escape reality, which is why I go to scripted shows.
It's like when they reference, the president of the United States is Billy Stump. Oh, okay. Okay, that's very different from what I'm expecting. And they have a very specific point of view on that person.
Yeah.
Or Kaiden or something. Like, they don't even try to hide whatever they're talking about. Like, just leave it out of my TV shows and movies, man. I don't care. It's John Wick. I don't need to know what you think about politics. I don't care.
Well, they have so much of it that's removed from reality and so much of the show, especially like just the medical perspective of it all. None of that's real. So why are we introducing real world scenarios in here? like Wait. That are just thrown in there for spice for one episode, and then we never talk about it again just because it's timely. Ew.
The medicine stuff is not real.
Pretty sure Dr. Stan told us that this is like all bullshit protocol. <It's> true.
Dr. Stan sure did.
Dr. You know what, Stan, the man.
What else isn't real is animated films. And I'm thinking specifically of this one where the good guy has a great plan, but doesn't thwart the bad guy as actually part of the plan. So it's like, hey, here's this whole way for the bad guy. They totally stopped me from doing this awesome thing. And the one that comes to mind is Nightmare Before Christmas, where Jack has this whole idea to steal Christmas and put Christmas on, but yet does absolutely nothing to prevent Oogie Boogie from coming in and blowing it all up. Like, why do you go through all that thought and not like think about like what are the bad things that could happen? Plan for the, you know, disasters, if you will. Nobody ever plans for the disasters.
Well, I don't know. I sort of get that. I don't sit there and think about the fact that, you know, there's a weird potato sack coming after to mess up my plans. I don't automatically assume that.
Clearly, you don't have anxiety, John, because that's what people with anxiety do.
True.
And Troy's just mad that people aren't as smart as him.
Well, no, yeah, people have to like literally live or die on implementing projects in their day jobs. And you have to think about contingencies. What happens if it's late? What happens if the cost goes over? What happens if this, you know, all that has to be factored in. And yet nobody factors that in when they write a movie storyline.
Are you guys ready to go to some listener comments on this topic? Or do you have some more you want something
no,
else?
No, we're not done.
No, yeah, we can totally do listener comments.
John, you just spoke for her. She said the opposite, so I'm going to defer to the lady. What do you got?
Well, we'll mix it up. We'll just throw some listener comments in as part of the general discussion since we're not following any specific order. Sure. So Zolidus over on the Discord said, I don't worry about it, but I heard people are upset with explosions in space specifically. But his only annoyance is more of a general nature. If you have a set, especially in older movies, it feels like a set and not an apartment or a street or whatever they actually put it in. Many times the sounds feel a bit like they are actually on a stage rather than actually in the real place.
Hmm. Interesting. That's true. And that takes them out of it.
Yes.
I could see that. Mark Andrew, how about the point gun at someone to threaten them, but then cock the gun back to further threaten, deeming the initial point of gun useless? Just immediately cock the gun when pointing it at someone, you jabroni.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that.
Hey, it's emphasis. It's like, hey, I'm threatening you, and then they don't listen. Then they, you know, you cock it one more time. You cock it, and then it's like, oh, now you're serious.
That's their warning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, they weren't serious when they pointed the gun at my head, but now that they've really got the bullet loaded, we're ready to go.
Exactly.
So time to back down.
That's right. Chuck Gibbons does want to know, like, how lousy trained assassins are at shooting and how they constantly get made fools of by the hero of the movie. I can't stand when you have assassins that miss all the time. These are hired professionals and they keep missing. It drives me nuts. Stormtroopers, basically.
It makes like me crazy. Didn't have a job.
Yeah, it makes me crazy too. But at the same time, like, they're only really good at shooting people who aren't the star.
That's true. They get all the innocent bystanders in the attack. Oh, they nick this guy. They nick the cable guy. But
yeah,
boy, the star's gone. He's good. That's funny.
Like, all right, so. Jack Reacher, the first movie, you know, when he's shooting those people in front of the courthouse and it's an impossible shot. That guy is making the most impossible shots, but Jack Reacher in the middle of a gravel pit, and he's up in a high spot next to a light shining on top of him. He can't hit him from there. Come on.
Well, you're just going to need to dial it down when you're attacking. Are on Jack Reacher. That's all I'm going to say. It's a great freaking movie.
Well, I'm not talking about the real Jack Reacher. I'm just talking about the Tom Cruise one.
I like that movie. It's a great movie. You son of a bitch. Son of a bitch. Wes Steenson said spaceships that make noise in outer space that's audible. That's funny. That's audible during an exterior shot. There's no air to carry the sound in space. And also silencers. Ooh. So silencers used on guns in movies because suppressors only reduce the sound of the firearm they're mounted on by a few decibels. Both are good points. They don't take me out of it, though.
They don't take me out, but that's a good point. You know what takes me out, though, since we're, now that I have a moment to interject? Fake babies. Super obvious fake babies.
Like American Sniper fake babies?
That is exactly what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Super fake babies. Or babies that come brand new out of the womb, out of like, you know, and they're already like 5 months old. Their eyes are wide open. They're like able to play around.
They're running down the hallway.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, here's your brand new child. Let's cut the umbilical cord off this toddler.
Literally doing jump rope with the umbilical cord. Yeah.
Going back to the original comment, there's only a handful of things that have done space battles and spaceships well. And I think Battlestar Galactica is one of them, and maybe Firefly.
No, I disagree with that comment. You mean well in terms of science, I guess. But here's my thing. I don't give a shit. It's a science fiction show. It's not real. There's no laser swords. There's none of that. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't.
Make it exciting. And not hearing it on Firefly always drove me nuts. Drove me nuts. Insane.
Okay. All right. Stand it. All right.
I'm like,
I get it.
I want to hear the shit.
I think ultimately my point was Battlestar did a good job.
I got it. I got it. Based on that science, sure. But based on making shit exciting, not so much. Because, you know, in space, no one can hear you.
Yeah, I'll take a sighting over science any day of the week.
Exactly. Except for my, you know, current health. Because I shouldn't have a pork chop, so I probably won't have a pork chop. I'll just, you know, eat healthy. Let's see. Becky Trumbo. Locking doors. If 5 deadbolts had to open to get in, those 5 deadbolts need to be locked again. It always takes me out of the moment. That's funny. That is funny.
I love that. Takes 15 minutes to get into a place. It takes 15 minutes to stay safe in it.
It's a good point. It's a very good point. Oh, this is my brother, so you know it's right. When a hero or villain throws a cigarette, this is Brad Peterson. When a hero or villain throws a cigarette on gasoline and it erupts in flames, especially when the gasoline has been spilled for a while and there would be less vapor in the air. Yeah.
Mm, that's a good one.
Yeah. But they always look so cool when they're walking away. And, they do. A cigarette really isn't, it's not like a flame usually. So, but it looks cool. It always looks cool.
How about characters who know information that is absolutely impossible for them to have known?
What do you mean?
As if they overheard the conversation and eavesdropped to understand like some secret information, but they weren't there. How did they know? How did they figure this out?
They're guilty. I always assume they're in on it at that point.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Interesting. That's how you figure out the mystery.
Okay. Well, you just ruined my whole life. So thank you.
Why did I ruin your whole life?
Because I didn't think about that.
Were they
now I have to go back and reassess if that was all logical or if it was stupid writing. So am I stupid or are they stupid? That's what I have to figure out.
It's
now.
Just like in all those cop shows where, you know, they're talking to a suspect and the suspect said, well, you know, I don't know what Shirley was doing there. And then they go, I never said anything about Shirley. You know, it's that kind of thing. Gotcha. Even though that would,
I still think there are examples that I can't think of right now.
I'm sure
they
do
this, though.
But this would never hold up in court, is all I'm saying. Tracy said, when TV or movies, when it's supposed to be dark or nighttime, but they film it so dark, it's hard to really see what's going on. Yeah, I have a problem with that for sure. But I have a bigger problem with continuity where it's daylight in one shot and then they switch to another angle and it's nighttime.
Any continuity error drives me bonkers. Because if I can notice it, this is not good. I'm oblivious to half the things that exist in the world. So if I'm figuring it out, we have a problem here, sir.
I almost failed my senior film project for that exact thing.
You did?
You should have.
Yep. There was we thought of everything, right? We turned off the ice machine in the hotel. It was a hotel lobby, basically. And we turned off like the ice machine and got rid of all the external noises to make sure it all sounded the same. There was a clock on the back wall. And so for the entire, 6 minute thing, all you see is like 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
Oh my God.
No one ever thought about the clock on the back wall. The rest of it was great, but the clock literally almost failed us.
Wow.
Did you edit it out or would you refilm it or what'd you guys do?
No, we were like, yeah, sorry, we missed the clock.
Oh.
Two middle fingers on your way out the door. Missed the clock. Bye.
And I mean, I don't know how many times we edited it, went through it, looked at it, never reshot it. And then we're like, literally the minute the presentation starts, like 2 minutes in, I was like, the effing clock on the back wall.
Oh, there's another, Sky Calgaro. He's got a big problem with the whole space thing. Marvel can't science, specifically Avengers Infinity War. Forget about exposure to the vacuum of space not killing Thor instantly. How can he be heard talking? I get that he's a god or whatever, and he could survive being in a vacuum. Fine, whatever. Being a god doesn't change basic laws of physics. You need some kind of atmosphere to carry sound waves. There is no sound in space, and that includes gods yakking at a talking raccoon. Let me jump in on this one, because
the sounds in space keeps coming up. I want it on record that NASA themselves has proven that there is actual sound in space. Now, it requires a shit ton of gases to be present in the moment, because then the sound is actually bouncing off of the gas particles. But sound in space is possible in the right environment, and mostly around a black hole. So a tragic enough explosion in that instant, could you hear the explosion of the Death Star? Very possible, because the concentration of gas is in the explosion at that moment. Now, it's not audible to the human ear because of the frequency that it resonates at, but you could record it and amplify it a bazillion times, and you could actually make it into something that is audible for the human ear. But there is sound in space.
That was a weird, very interesting fact and caveat that did not change any of their perspectives. Because it's still not audible to the human ear.
But it is scientifically captured.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to throw my two cents. It's freaking Marvel. I don't care. There. That's it.
It's also an alternate Earth where physics might be different.
It's ridiculous. Why do people get upset about this kind of stuff? I don't get. If you're watching a movie where you got a purple guy taking out a bunch of other little guys in capes and they're zipping around and bleepity bleepity blah. If reality took a vacation right there, all right? It's just not going to be present.
Mm-hmm.
Oi, oi, oi.
The guy literally snapped his finger to unravel people.
That made sense, though. Really.
Well, it's because he said so. He was going to do 50% of all of civilization.
One more I want to mention this. Mike Barnes. He said, sports movies where the actors have clearly never played the sport they are supposed to be good at. I love Keanu Reeves, but in Point Break and in The Replacements, he's supposed to be this great quarterback. Instead, he plays like a guy who's from Canada with a hockey background. He would have been great in Miracle, where they actually cast hockey players. And Tim Robbins in Bull Durham pitches like he just saw baseball for the first time. Oh, and in Days of Thunder, why are the drivers constantly smashing into each other on purpose during the race? Aerodynamics are a huge part of racing, and trashing your car on purpose will almost certainly guarantee you will not cross the finish line first. Bad depictions of sports really stand out to me. I just thought that was hysterical and true.
Those are amazing.
And also, Keanu Reeves was a terrible FBI agent in Point Break. He was just terrible at everything he did in that movie. He was bad at his job. He couldn't surf for shit. He was kind of a terrible skydiver. He got his friend killed. I'm just saying, Johnny Utah is a dick.
He was able to get those sandwiches, though.
He got two of them.
That's funny. All right, well, that's it for that topic. I do want to mention a follow-up to the topic from last week, because I forgot to mention it. We were talking about positivity. That was our whole episode last week. Why can't fans be more positive? And I'm sure we just killed that episode with this one. I'm sorry. So Matt Cordisco had said, and I didn't get it in time, in terms of positivity, why can't fans be more positive? Sometimes people have a competitive spirit and it manifests itself in different ways. Also, I think this is still early internet problems. Not early internet like end of the world and shoes, but we are still in the internet's infancy historically. There were more duels in the Wild West than there are today. People still have disagreements. They just go about them differently. I don't agree. I think there's more disagreements today, just less, you know, dueling pistols. Although, I think there'd be less disagreements if we did do dueling pistols. Maybe we need to reintroduce that.
Did you just advocate for murder?
Nope.
Is it?
This is a new sport.
I think it's more like assisted suicide.
Nope. It's a sport. and just
bodily injury.
It's a sport. You got to sign a waiver. You know, make it real. Got to sign a waiver. All right. Remember, you can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, on Twitter, or Discord, thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're about to get out of here, but let's do a whole teachable minute since Amanda hasn't been here in a minute or several. And tell us in 1 minute or less, tell us something you've learned from any movie or TV show recently.
So I figured this would be really good timing to utilize the first half of Bridgerton season 3, since the other half of Bridgerton comes out this week. Mm-hmm. And the thing that kind of came that definitely stemmed out of this show, in particular with the character that's being highlighted in this season.
So many jokes from just those words to this show, but
probably
I didn't touch any of them. I just let them go.
Don't touch. No touchy.
Okay.
But there's this moment in the show where we have our characters who are kind of like going back and forth around their relationship and, you know, essentially is am I good enough for him to like me? What do I need to do to capture a husband? And she's really under this impression that there's something she needs to do. And at one point, her best friend, who's kind of friend-zoned her, but then kind of maybe not, if you've watched, the whole idea here is he tells her, you don't need to change anything. And he recaps, like, do you remember the first time that we met, and goes through that experience. And I think the thing that I took away from that is, which is something we all know and I guess preach to each other, but don't really preach to ourselves, is that be authentically yourself, and people who deserve to be around you will appreciate and love you for who you are. You're never going to satisfy every person around you. People are inevitably not going to like you, but that's not really your problem. So just continue being yourself and loving yourself, and eventually the right people will love you too.
Wow. That was deep.
And also, if you got good boobies, show them off.
I'm with you on all points, honestly. I am. Yeah. I'm with you. Great points. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Leave on a high note, if you know what I'm saying. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn. Isn't that called a shelf when you got a nice pair of boobs? I don't know what the...
It's covered up with a perfectly folded sheet. I wouldn't know.
Also, for context, Penelope has said that she has great boobs, and she's very excited for us to see them.
I didn't need context. That was already in my head. I'm good. I'm good with this. I'm good with all of it.